Toddlers are self-regulating in their food habits. If only I could be better at it. After toddlerhood, they lose that effortless turning away from food when full. Today, we discuss this and other toddler food behaviors, especially as compared to our own more adult behavior. We're here with Hassan Morali to discuss his book. It's on Tip of the Tongue. Welcome to Tip of the Tongue, a podcast on the Nitty Grits Network, where we explore the intersection of food and drink and museums. This is Liz Williams. We're here today with Dr. Hassan Morali. He is associate professor at McMaster's University and also on the faculty at Johns Hopkins University. He is a physician and author of Sleep Well, Take Risks, Squish the Peas, Secrets from the Science of Toddlers for a Happier, More Successful Way of Life. Welcome to Tip of the Tongue.
Thanks, Liz. It's nice to be here.
So I know that you talk about this in the book, but tell us what it was that made you decide to write this book.
I'm very fortunate that I've been in pediatrics now for 14 years, and I get to work with a lot of children. And over these years, I've noticed the younger ones, especially in the age 1 to 5 range, do a lot of things a little bit differently and a little bit more special. And I thought to myself, as I'm watching these kids do these different things, like taking risks and having a lot of confidence to do whatever they wanted to, exercise every day, that some of these lessons we could really take away from them. And so once I started diving into the research and really looking at these activities that they do and how this maps onto adult wellness, I was surprised pleasantly. And it really was the idea for the book and has kind of come about from my experience.
So tell me, I could tell from your book that you have a daughter, but she used to be a toddler and she's probably not anymore. What was she specifically doing that made you have this feeling? Like, did you try out some of your ideas on her to see how she, through observations, to see how she was reacting? I'm particularly interested in the food things because, of course, this is a food podcast. And so the idea of self-regulating and not always choosing the candy the way you see other researchers trying to see how long children could keep away from donuts and all that kind of thing. It seems like it was a kind of a counterintuitive result.
Yeah, so she's just about 4, just exiting that period now. We certainly still have a lot of fun together when we're eating. And really the title, the part of it was Squish the Peas, really comes from that idea of when little kids are with their food, they're also having fun and incorporating play, which they do into just about everything. So my daughter is 4 years old now, so kind of exiting that toddler period in the preschool period now. And so in the last couple of years, as she's been a toddler, I've certainly learned a lot from her. And that's what I want to take away from these experiences and what I write about in my book. So for her specifically, I learned how to snack better. So I used to eat a lot of fairly unhealthy snacks, but having her around has been wonderful because when she gets home from preschool, like late afternoon, she has just a set of a few things she likes to eat and snack on. And those are raw carrots, cucumbers, beet hummus, and avocado. And those things are incredibly healthy. And I don't think there's a day since she was an infant that she's gone without eating at least half an avocado. And so this type of simplification that toddlers have with their palate, although, you know, parents and others are always trying to get them to eat different things, I think if they're healthier options actually makes things better for them. And we can learn a lot from that and kind of simplify the snacks we have. And if they're healthy choices, then that's wonderful.
And so do you share the snacks with her?
I do. And so she's got me eating raw carrots and cucumbers just about every day as well. I'm not a huge fan of beet hummus, which she is, but that's what we go to. We go to the fridge and we get them out there. Yeah, just easy to prep because I don't spend a lot of time in the kitchen prepping food, but the easy stuff is easy, and that's our snack, and we take that whenever we're out and about during the day too.
Yeah, you couldn't feel guilty at all about giving her those kinds of snacks. That's really great. I noticed when my older son was born and we started introducing solid food that he would eat it very, very enthusiastically. And then all of a sudden, the last spoonful, he would spit it out and start to cry. And that's how you kind of knew, okay, that was enough. And it was very jolting for me the very first time he did it. I thought, what is that? Did you suddenly stop liking it? And that, of course, I had no idea how much to feed him, but he sort of told me.
It's so true, and I love that example so much. It's perfect because the main point I try to make in the book around eating is that they're truly mindful eaters. We talk about this a lot now because adults have a tendency to overeat, and that's because we eat for a lot of different reasons. Boredom, other people are eating, we're not feeling happy, all kinds of reasons. But toddlers don't have that. They focus on their food. They eat when they're hungry. And as soon as they feel full, they're just much more in tune with their bodies. They will just refuse the food. So they can be spitting, like you mentioned. I talk about squishing peas or playing, but they'll do other things to not eat. And parents get very, very, very concerned about this. Even in the ER, I work in the ER, about their kids not eating. And sometimes that's true and they're not well. But the vast majority of the time, it's because their kids are in tune with their bodies. They're not overeating. And I think that's probably the most important lesson around food we can take away from them.
It's also, I think, a difficult kind of transition. If you nurse your child, it becomes very difficult to know how much they've had because you don't actually see the food, you don't see the volume. And that makes it hard to know because they don't start spitting that out. It's just a little, it was jarring to me anyway when it happened the first time. But then he kept doing it. And so it became obvious that that was enough, what didn't take a whole lot of thought.
I think they make it very, very clear. And yeah, it's cute that your son used to do that and you're able to pick up on that. So it worked.
Yeah, it did. It definitely did work. But that, how long does this last? I mean, when do you see that a child has kind of transitioned out of this almost perfect body food relationship into something else?
It's kind of in that later, like end of toddler, later preschool years, like when they're getting towards five, well, they'll start eating more for other reasons. And that's another thing. A lot of that is because they're distracted when they're eating. And if we could, not be distracted when we're eating, like eating in front of the TV is probably the biggest one, then we would also be able to just listen to our bodies more and regulate ourselves. There's a great term, you might have heard about it, called harahachibu. It comes from the blue zones in Okinawa and Japan, where people live into their 90s or over 100. And this term means to stop when you're 80% full, and so as not to overeat. And so when you're listening to your body, you're able to do that. And this is really gets back to what comes up a lot now is mindful eating.
So what do you do? All right, let's say that you try to have family conversations around a meal as your children get older. Does that take away from mindful eating, or should you always just be quiet when you eat so that you're absolutely concentrated on the food?
No, I think that family conversations are wonderful, and there's a lot of great data on the benefits both to parents and for kids when they're sitting down to eat as a family. But it's really about eating a little bit slower and paying attention to how you're eating, drinking water with your meals. All of these things just help us think about if we're actually feeling hungry or not, because it takes a little while for our brain to get the messages from our stomach about how full we are. And so just slowing down the eating process can help get the message when we actually need it, not much later, and then we're feeling too full.
So I wonder also how influenced children are, say, when they start going to school, whether it's preschool or regular school, by what other children eat. I grew up in a very Sicilian family, and so everything was cooked by my mother or my grandmother, and there wasn't a lot of pre-made food or pre-packaged food. And so that was just the way I grew up. And when I did that with my children, they wanted everything pre-packaged, like they wanted to eat Lunchables and all kinds of things that all of their friends had. And I was sending them to school with, pasta primavera or something, and they were embarrassed by it. I think today, now they're happy about it, but at the time, I think they thought it was just something that I was doing to punish them.
It's great that you were able to do that, and they certainly benefited a great deal from home cooked meals that you were able to provide. I think what you hit on is something that affects all of us. We're so influenced in a lot of different things, but certainly by food, by what others around us are eating and doing. I mean, even if simple as the restaurant choice when you're going out with your friends will influence, how many calories you're going to consume and what they order. So yes, it's something definitely to just be mindful about. And, at least with your kids or other people's kids, we can have a little bit more control sometimes. But yes, it unfortunately can lead to a lot of battles because the things that get advertised as well, not only what their friends are eating, are the most unhealthy things. And so it's hard. I still, treat my daughter to some unhealthy fast food as well. But yeah, I can imagine as she gets older, it's going to get harder.
Well, I also think that if you cook with your children and incorporate them into the cooking process, then they're more likely to be happy to eat that food that they've helped prepare in a way that they might not if they didn't ever participate in cooking.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you brought that up. I had a note because I listened to one of your recent podcasts with a nursing student you had, and that was one of the things she talked about is cooking with her children. And we do that at home too, and it makes such a big difference in, yeah, them wanting to eat the food that they made you, them wanting to serve the food to you, and then requesting again to cook things that they know how to cook and learn new things in the kitchen, I think. It's a
Yeah.
wonderful experience for everybody to be cooking with your kids for sure.
I think also it helps them know about the food. We run a camp for children every summer in which that's what they do is they cook their own meals. They're 7 to about 11, and they cook their own meals at school at the camp, and then they set the table and they serve themselves and the other children and they eat. And it's really amazing how transformational it is because you see children who actually believe that peanut butter grows in a jar on a tree. And if you make peanut butter with them or any kind of butter, nut butter, and they see it made and how it gets transformed from that nut into the butter, that you can see in their eyes how amazed they are and how they had no idea.
Yeah, no, I love that too. And it made me think about grocery shopping as well, like the whole process of getting the food, and if someone has a garden, like maybe even growing some vegetables to getting that food on the plate, that whole process is so helpful for them. And one of, our favorite activities with our little one, her name's Aria, is going to the grocery store and getting the foods that she wants to eat and potentially to cook with. And we give her some ideas, and she likes to, yeah, gather all those things and then get home and put them away and then start cooking. So I think that can be, yeah, a lot of fun. And I have one little plug because you mentioned peanut butter, and I'm glad you did because I'm a pediatric ER doctor. Is just early introduction of foods like peanuts when your kids are infants is incredibly helpful to decrease the incidence of allergies.
So, have you ever done any studies, or you probably read about studies if you haven't done them, on mother's milk and what that might mean? Because I've seen changes in this since the time that I was nursing. So when I was nursing, the The advice to mothers was always about don't eat Brussels sprouts or any of the cruciferous vegetables because it's going to give your child colic and it's going to make your milk bitter and they're not going to like it. And don't eat anchovies. I mean, all kinds of things that I ate all the time were on the list of don't eat these things. And so I basically decided to ignore all the advice. And my, one of the things that I worried about was that if you didn't give the children some kind of, I mean, I didn't eat so that they would have variety. I don't mean to say that I ate so that I could feed my children better, but I thought about the fact that every time the children drank milk when you were nursing, it tasted different than it would if you ate the same thing all the time. And I worried about children who were taking formula because that food tastes the same every single time. And children could get used to only food tasting exactly the same every time they ate it. It worried me.
Yeah, I think that, you talked about breastfeeding, and it's such an important thing if moms are able to. And sometimes, moms get a little bit, I think often they get too much pressure around breastfeeding and what they need to be thinking about and eating. And I just want to say that it's okay to take that pressure off. Like, if you're able to breastfeed, and if you're not, that's totally fine. Then it's wonderful if you're able to, and there's not a lot that you need to specifically avoid or think about. I mean, there are some obvious ones like alcohol, high amounts of caffeine. I think the only one I would say that comes to mind is fish that's high in mercury. So those types of fishes that we want to avoid, but there's not a whole lot. Sometimes we see something called cow's milk protein allergy, which is an allergy to milk proteins, and that comes with blood in the stool. And so we, change mom's diet a little bit, but other than that, any breast milk is helpful for a whole host of reasons. And so we shouldn't be, thinking about exactly what to eat a lot, I think, with breastfeeding.
I think about more the fact that the food tastes the same all the time, and that when you want to go to a restaurant or especially a fast food restaurant, it always tastes the same, and that that becomes the thing that becomes important, as opposed to knowing that food is going to be different. Every apple tastes different, every carrot tastes different, that sort of thing. But I guess that's something that I think as a person who cooks is important. For example, when you have a recipe, and this is something my grandmother used to she didn't say everything is going to taste different, but she acted that way. So if you made tomato sauce, which she made all the time, you had to taste the tomato sauce. And if it wasn't sweet enough, then you mashed up a carrot in it, or you grated a carrot into the tomato sauce to make it have a more balanced flavor. So it wasn't too acidic or whatever. It had a balance to it. And so, of course, it's very hard to put that into a recipe, but it was her recognition that every batch of tomatoes that you use is going to be different than the one before. And so you have to taste in order to get the proper balance. And just measuring isn't going to be sufficient. And she would never have put sugar in her tomato sauce because she thought that made it taste sweet, but that was all. Whereas if you added something that simply had a natural sweetness, like a carrot, then it tasted right and it fit into the tomato sauce. But she was an outstanding cook, so she knew exactly what she was doing, but it was all without any training, just her own developed palate.
I
And
like
that,
that idea. Yeah, go ahead.
no, I was just going to say, and that I think helps children too. But I also know that in a busy world, it becomes really hard to cook that way because you're throwing things together, and all you can do is, well, you can only do the best you can. And we sometimes take shortcuts because they seem to be very helpful in terms of time management, but they might not be always the best in terms of our health or our ultimate enjoyment of the food. So Anyway, it's always something that you have to balance. It's never perfect.
Yeah, and I like this idea. It's not something I've, done or thought about with my daughter about how things taste different each time and how to do that balance. That's fascinating. I'm thinking I'm going to talk to her a little bit more about that.
Well, if you eat something that's pre-prepared, like breakfast cereal that's highly flavored or whatever, it doesn't taste different every time. It tastes exactly the same. But every time you have a grated carrot salad with, let's say, apple slices and pecans, it's going to taste different every time because all of those things are just natural in their natural state. They haven't even been cooked. And so it'll be different.
I think I'm not even at the mindful level to be thinking about those things, but yeah, this is a good tip for me too.
So, what do you suggest that parents do to help encourage their children to be the way they are? In other words, to stop themselves from turning into something that might be negative by just keeping themselves the way they are.
I think the most important thing for little kids and as they get older and for adults is routine. And so having those set foods that at least are staples, like I talked about the snacks, and if we can have those and have those as part of like the regular snack menu and have it fairly limited because too many choices are not good for anybody. I think that's probably the most important thing. Routine, I think, helps everybody with so many different things, and eating is definitely one of them, both the times of when you're eating and what you're eating as well. And I have one other tip for little kids. This is just a fascinating study that I came across, and I talk about it in the book more in terms of reading and how powerful reading is, but it relates to food, so I'm just going to mention it. There was a group of toddlers, 1 and 2 year olds, and they were asked, this is from the UK, and the parents were asked, what is the one vegetable that your child refuses to eat? So, not that they don't like, they just absolutely refuse to eat. So, they took that vegetable and they made a book about this vegetable. And they gave another group of parents a separate book that wasn't about the vegetable. And so, to have a randomized control, and they gave half the parents the vegetable book and the other half not. And every day for 2 weeks, the parents read this book about this vegetable to them. And they followed these kids for 3 months. And just reading that book about that vegetable made them like the vegetable more and eat it more after the 3 month follow-up, and I'm sure beyond too. So, introducing things through books about learning about food and vegetables and anything else around cooking, I think is a great way to keep your kids engaged with the eating process as well.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. A really great way to overcome a certain level of resistance for at least trying foods that they don't like. Yeah, that's a great idea. I love that.
Thanks.
So what, we've really just talked about the food part of your book, but the book is really, really fascinating. And I just kept thinking when I was reading it about my own children and my grandchildren. I will tell you, I have one of my grandchildren loved cherry tomatoes,
Oh,
and
yes.
she associated me with cherry tomatoes and expected me to have cherry tomatoes at all times. But one of the things that I really thought about with her, which I didn't think about until I looked back on my own children from because of her, is that we don't actually teach children the language that they need to describe food and why they like it and why they don't. Whereas, for example, we teach children the shapes, we teach them colors so that they can describe a picture or a thing and they have the vocabulary. They may not like yellow as much as they like purple, but they can tell you this is yellow, it's that this isn't purple enough, or whatever they want to say. And we give them almost no language support in terms of describing food. And so then they wind up saying, I don't like it, it's yucky. But that is such an unspecific word that it becomes very difficult for you to know. Is it the texture that you don't like? Is it the flavor that you don't like? Is it too bitter, or is it too acidic, or whatever it might be? You don't have that vocabulary. And so my granddaughter was telling me about the a tomato that she was eating, And of course, it's just one bite, it's these little cherry tomatoes, and they were tiny. And she said, "Do you know what there is about these tomatoes that I like?" And I said, "No, tell me about it." And so she started to talk about how she liked when you bit into it, all of the juice squirted into your mouth and you could feel it everywhere. And it started out being kind of lemony, and then it turned sweet. And as you chewed it up, you swallowed it, you wanted another one. It was so amazing to me to listen to her analysis of the flavor of this food and why it was good and what she liked about it. And so then we started after that talking about other aspects of food. We talked about crunchy and other kinds of textural words that dealt with food and stuff. So she would have the vocabulary to do that analysis.
Yeah, this is so great. I think it's such a good point to, get into those discussions with children and reading like I talked about, because that, yeah, as they develop the language, they can learn more about it and yeah, exactly figure out what they like. It just made me think of my daughter. She likes things that are squishy, and so she has like a lot of squishy balls and things like that. And she discovered that if you cut a lemon in half, it's pretty squishy. And so she loves like squeezing lemons onto everything, including just directly into her mouth. And so, yeah, that's her thing right now.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. And she's a good sleeper.
She's a good sleeper because she's on a routine, just like everything else. And I think the toddler bedtime routine is probably the biggest thing that if we could all get on, would improve our lives. And I'll just briefly mention it because it's so simple. It's setting a bedtime that you know you're going to stick to an hour before you take a hot bath or shower. Number two, for toddlers, it's getting lotion on them, but for you, it can be any hygiene-related item. And then ending the night with a good book. And none of this involves any screens. And if you do that, and if you stick with it, I am sure that will help your sleep.
Well, all that sounds really exciting. Are you working on another book now?
No, not yet. Right now, I'm doing a lot of podcasts and writing. Yeah, that's the main focus right now.
And so, are you writing about the points that you make in the book, or are you writing about something different?
Yeah, writing about more articles, like shorter articles. I actually did just write an article about mindful eating lessons from toddlers. It's in a magazine called Best Ever You. I will send that to you, and perhaps you can put it in the show notes. I think your listeners will be interested in that.
Oh yeah, I'd love to do that. That's a good idea. Yeah, and send me anything else you think that should be, available to listeners. That would be great.
Yeah, definitely. And the rest of my book, this is really the basics. What we just talked about is eating and sleeping. And I really go into all the other wonderful lessons we can learn from little kids. And half of it, I think, applies to more personal life, like laughter and reading and play. And the other half of the book, I've really focused on work-related lessons that we can learn from them, like teamwork and asking a lot more questions, saying no, and taking risks.
Yes, all of those things are hard. Sometimes saying no is a risk. So
Yeah, that's true. And there is nobody better than a toddler at saying no.
that's certainly true. Well, thank you so much for being on Tip of the Tongue today. It's been really a pleasure talking to you. I've learned a whole lot. It's been great.
Thank you so much. I've learned a lot from you as well.
Thanks for listening to Tip of the Tongue, a part of the Nitty Grits Network of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Subscribe to this and other food and drink related podcasts at southernfood.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to keep up with me, Liz Williams, you can subscribe to my Substack newsletter, also called Tip of the Tongue, for more information about this podcast, recipes, and just what is going on. I'm Liz Williams. Thanks for listening.